Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning on this Tuesday morning. It's the 28th of November, and very nice to have you with us. We are thrilled that you have decided to spend at least a portion of your day in our company. We are we cannot imagine better company to be in, and we thank you very much for taking the time with us. Let me introduce our panel just so you know exactly who you're spending time with. It seems like a good thing. Our good friend J.P. Miller is here. He joins us on Tuesdays, and he is with us this morning. He's from the Empire Report, which I'm addicted to. I can't stop reading, and I thank you very much for your work, and I thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
Good to have you here. The associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, joins us. He is, I think, our longest-lasting contributor to this program. he has taken all the slings and arrows over the last 17 or 18 years and has been here every day in the dink and thank, and we're thrilled that he is with us on this Tuesday.
Thank you.
Always good to see you. Alan Chartok, you got Mike beat. Good morning. Welcome. How are you?
But I'm nervous. I'm nervous because I don't like to be in the room with nice people. And these two guys are the nicest people I know. They really are.
You can hold your own.
Splendid. Well, thanks there, Joe.
I'm looking for an opportunity to be mean today now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm sure in the next 90 minutes in the discussions that we'll have, we can come up with something. I was looking for a percentage a moment ago. I was, I don't know if you feel this way, but there's the people who take the shower in the morning and there's the people that take the shower at night. Like, you're either a shower in the morning person or a shower at night person.
Have you forgotten something?
What?
There are people who take a shower in the morning and take a shower night also to help them sleep a little bit.
Well, that's sort of my
relaxes
point.
Relaxes
your muscles. So people who say, oh, my God, I couldn't go to bed with the dirt of the day, and then they get up and it takes a little time off of their morning ritual. Then there's other people who say, well, that's gross, and then I want to get everything off, be clean and fresh when I go to work.
Good point.
So last night I decided, I'm normally a morning guy, but last night I decided to take a shower. So I took a shower last night, and when I woke up, I realized the reason I don't do it is because my hair was standing straight up and was all like, right. And I have enough of it that it was problematic. It was Don King-ish and it just looked weird. So I decided just to put my head underneath the faucet.
Sure.
And freshen up. So I did this in the tub. So I leaned down and I put my hand down on the tub.
Oh, no.
And my hand slips.
Oh, no.
They are slippery, those tubs.
Right. Now, so this is what I did this morning on my way in. 68% of accidents happen at the home. 14% of them happen in the tub.
Jeez.
Is that 14% of the 68%?
Yes. Okay. And but this was my ride in this morning because I went in and I hit my, so I went down and I fell, and then initially just my ankle hurt, but then I realized I had hit my head. I realized I had hit my
Is that ibuprofen I see?
Yes, right. That was the second round, Mike. I'm ready. weirdly on the left hand side, right here in the torso above the second belt loop. Yeah. Oddly, that hurts.
Not so oddly.
This is all I'm telling you is just be careful when you get it in.
Not so oddly.
Take your shower in the morning.
Yeah. I'm never doing that again.
Unless you have a sleight of hair like I'm getting to be, and then you don't have to worry.
Dear panel, who really cares about your showers?
It is tough, too, because you're trying to make up for the missed shower in the morning. And you're trying to fake it, and you just can't quite do it. And
no.
You maybe get your shirt wet when you're trying to
get
your
hair
right.
Wet. Oh, yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
It's a disaster.
And being you and I both being of tall stature, you bend.
Oh, okay.
Which is true, right?
No, I thought it might be comparative.
Both disaster. Of them are gigantic.
The shaving thing's thrown off. Everything's thrown off.
It's all thrown off. It's all out the window.
So, but here's the difference between you and JP, and that is JP wears starched shirts like Rick Smith does. He sends them out to the cleaner.
No, these are wrinkle-free.
Yeah, that's
it looks awfully good for a wrinkle-free.
No starch, wrinkle-free. This is in the washing machine.
Wrinkle free is the
dear panel.
You know what? Screw it. Hey, I got a. You know what today is? It's I don't know if you woke up this morning and checked your email box, but I had about 738 emails. It's Giving Tuesday.
It is.
Yes, it is. Giving Tuesday, and you know what? You can give to us.
I mean, it sounds self-serving, but it is true that the people who are out there who are enjoying it right now or not enjoying it are really devotees and members of our community. And if, in fact, you know, there's nothing like a Giving Tuesday to say, okay, it's Giving Tuesday, I have to give something. So I'll give it to the institutions that I like the most. I'll give it to WMC. You know, we certainly need the money, and we'll have a major announcement coming soon about why we need the money. We can't do it right now, but we will. And, you know, we need everything we can get. I'm going to tell you that right now. The whole future of the radio station's at stake here.
So you got your Black Friday, you've got your Small Business Saturday, you have your Cyber Monday, and then you have Giving Tuesday.
Giving Tuesday.
So you finally get around to us, where we fit into this equation. And so thousands of nonprofits, and you've probably heard from all of them this morning. But
or in the mail.
Well, that's it. They're all out there, and they're looking, and then that's good, and that's great. They're raising money and awareness across the world today. So, hey, you know what? $10 a month. You can do $10 a month, and we'd even give you a present for you that you can pass on and give to as a holiday gift, WAMC socks. They are amazing. They're classic. They're beautiful. They're on the website, WAMC socks, or you can just give us whatever you want. Just make a donation for whatever you want. But we have the When the Pigs Fly socks. We have the classic socks. And I read yesterday, do you know the third most popular item on people's Christmas list is socks?
Wow. I read an article in the Times Union that said we have such a great audience that we are, they didn't say you because you have such a great audience, but they did say they listed all of the institutions in the Albany area who got money. I think at the top was obviously Albany Med, which certainly deserves it. And third was us. Can you imagine?
That is great.
That's remarkable. Great.
All right. So WAMC.org, you can give us a call as well, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262, and we've got you covered. But it's Giving Tuesday. Think about it, and if you can help us out, that would be great. We certainly won't turn down any donations of any size, and we love you for it. And if you want to get into the spirit of Giving Tuesday, we certainly would love to embrace you on this day. Let us take a break. When we come back, we'll get started. We'll talk about the items in the news, and we will... Okay, then I'll keep going. We don't have enough right now, so I'll keep going. All right. There you go. It's fine. That was my screw up. Okay. Hey, we're going to get started right now, everybody. It's don't worry about it, Al. It's fine. Good morning, and here we go for the topics for today. If you're ready, I'm ready. Let us talk about... the tax bill and the race for the tax bill, senators scrambling to advance the tax bill. Now we, with the new things of trying to make everybody happy, it shows that it will increasingly reward the wealthy, that the people actually making under, was it $77,000 a year, will be hurt much more in the next 10 years, I believe. The Republican tax bill is hurtling through Congress and increasingly tilting the United States tax code to benefit wealthy Americans as party leaders race to shore up wavering lawmakers who are requesting more help for high-earning business owners. Right now we have two senators who have said that they are against this bill as written, so they're doing everything that they can to try to win them over. Meanwhile, they can't afford to lose another vote. If they lose another vote, they're done. So in that... giving in to these two senators, then do you accidentally, on purpose, lose other senators? So the problem, of course, is to figure this all out. However, the Congressional Budget Office said this week that the Senate bill, as written, would hurt workers earning less than $30,000 a year in short order while delivering benefits to the highest earners throughout the next decade. By 2027, the Budget Office said, that's 10 years from today,
Americans earning $75,000 a year and below would be, as a group, see their taxes increase because individual tax cuts are set to expire at the end of 2025. At the heart of the debate is whether to more favorably treat small businesses and other so-called pass-through entities, businesses whose profits are distributed to their owners and taxed at rates for individuals. So that is the situation as we have it right now. When we look at the folks who are against this, who may oppose the tax bill, Bob Corker, Jeff Flake, James Lankford, Jerry Moran, Susan Collins, Ron Johnson, Steve Daines. Basically, it comes down to those seven individuals.
And for different reasons. The first four you mentioned just feel that the $1.5 trillion deficit on top of the deficit right. we already have is
That's
much
right.
too high. And they're true fiscal conservatives, and they see the peril of handing back all this money to and not being able to pay for it.
And remember that Republicans have traditionally been against high deficits. So this takes a little act of faith here to say, okay, it's okay this time when it's not been okay. We've been preaching this for years.
And I'm astounded that there are so few Republicans that are true deficit hawks. You know, for the Congress to approve a budget bill where they're going to spend $4 trillion, a record for the federal government, with Republicans in the White House, House of Representatives, and Senate. And then they now saying, okay, we want to add $1.5 trillion to the deficit. I'm surprised there aren't more Republican senators that aren't outraged at this.
Because you have a choice. On the one hand, tax cuts. You know, there are a lot of people who have no idea and will never have any idea what's in that bill. So you say, oh, these other guys, they're not for tax cuts. And that becomes very important. The more educated people get, the more unlikely it is that kind of logic, you know, will hold sway. And I think that's what's going on here. No Republican senator, and I distrust that entire list that Joe just read to us, to be honest with you. No Republican senator is going to be against, quote, tax cuts.
Correct.
It's just too risky.
Right, right. And in some cases, you know, they say it's just the way that the tax cuts are implemented, like a couple of them. Johnson, for example, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin and Steve Daines of Montana, they're saying that it doesn't positively impact small businesses enough and they want changes. And it seems to me if you're on the fence and you're a Republican senator right now, you could probably get just about anything put into that bill. They're throwing things into this thing. They're cutting little side deals. They really, really have the full court press on, to use a sports metaphor, to get this thing through, get it up for a vote this week. They don't even, you know, nobody knows what's in it. That's trouble.
They're putting stuff in so they can take it out.
Right.
And there are also like a one longtime Republican, Randy Levine, who's the president of the New York Yankees. He's a close friend of Donald Trump. He is criticizing this bill, saying, why are they not closing the carried interest loophole? All the Republicans and Trump would need to do was show some effort to raise some taxes from the wealthy.
Will you remind us what the
carried interest loophole is? That people that invest in real estate, like Donald Trump and his buddies in New York City,
yeah.
and hedge fund managers and private equity managers, the money that they invest and take, they get paid to manage other people's money. They can then reinvest that money tax-free, which is, it's a complex thing, but it's a big thing, and it's very lucrative for the hedge fund managers, the private equity managers, and the real estate guys. The New York Yankees president, a longtime Republican, is criticizing the Republican Congress for this. It also is going to amount to a tax increase for people in California and New York. And I can't imagine any Republican member of Congress in New York voting for this bill and trying to run on a tax increase. This is what people in New York get if they have a Republican president, House, and Senate, that the people in New York and California and other high tax states are effectively going to get a tax increase more than President Obama ever implemented.
So when you look at the other question mark here, of course, is Susan Collins from Maine, and her concern, of course, is healthcare and the repeal. So the you wonder if you. If you have those three senators, the two you just mentioned, plus Senator Collins, then it's in trouble. But
I don't trust them. I don't trust any of them. You know, on this, this is not just the health care bill, which they've taken. They will have taken health care away from so many Americans, and people realize that they're going to have something taken away, which they absolutely must have. This is, quote, tax cut country. You know, it's we want to give you a tax cut. You know, so no, I think I'm suspicious of the health care thing. Yesterday, our wonderful panelists said they have to have the health care in the tax cut bill because they need the money.
They want to specifically yeah. they want to take away the requirement, the mandate that yeah. you have. Sure. You know, basically the penalty for not having health insurance and. See, that mandate forces a lot of people of lower income levels and middle income levels to go out and buy health insurance to meet that mandate, and then they're covered by health insurance. And the supporters of this tax bill yeah. are saying, see, we're going to cut your taxes.
We're going to take a break. We'll hold there, and when we come back, we'll talk about this. We'll get letters, and we'll move on to other subjects as well. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 35 minutes past 9 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller making up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Quick reminder, it's Giving Tuesday. And if, you know, you want to give and you'd like to give to us, we certainly don't mind. WAMC.org. You can also give us a call, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. We have some letters and we'll move on to some other topics for today.
And one thing before I even said that, I wanted to piggyback on what you just said about
speaking of pigs. Go ahead.
Well, somebody might think that you meant that personally towards me.
Only you would think that.
I see. Okay. No, I wanted to just say that we are immensely grateful, and that almost all of the people who are on Giving Tuesday, Joe, have been here and beneficiaries of the fact that you've interviewed them. So I think that that's a very important point that we should make out as to why it's so essential for everyone to support us. Okay. Anyway, Casey says, dear panel, help me out with a reality check, please. The tax bill is awful and should be easy for Democratic leadership in the Senate to speak out against. There used to be a saying that the most dangerous place in Washington was between Chuck Schumer and a television camera. I always thought it was a microphone. Nowadays, I feel like we should put his face on the side of a milk carton. Now, is it just me or is my reality check bouncing? Where are the Democrats, Casey in Rexford?
That's a great question. And Chuck Schumer, I think, is building a little bit of a relationship with Trump that he's had over the years. I also think that Schumer sees that the corporate tax rate of 35% in the United States really is untenable.
Too high.
We really need to have a 20% tax rate. And you may see this is something I think we might talk
about. Not that they
about.
Pay it in the first place, JP, because as we know, some major institutions with two letters around here pay nothing, I understand.
Right. There are a lot of institutions that pay nothing, but the corporate tax rate is uncompetitive. And I also think that you see, I think this is what we may talk about a little later in the program, but why Donald Trump is focusing his fire on Elizabeth Warren and not Chuck Schumer. It's because Chuck Schumer is not attacking Trump like a typical minority leader would.
Aren't they meeting today?
They are meeting today again.
With President Trump.
We'll see if they hug like they did last time.
That'll be interesting.
We'll see, yeah. Right? Okay.
Okay. Good morning, panel, says Eric.
Good morning.
My friend Eric. Just as distasteful as his Pocahontas remark, Trump's holding the ceremony in front of the portrait of Andrew Jackson. Yeah, that was an even deeper insult.
We'll get to all that in just a minute.
Historically speaking, Trump's remarks were calculated. The portrait wasn't. His historical knowledge just doesn't run that deep. And that's Eric from Richmond, Massachusetts. I don't know. You know, people keep telling me, you know, he's a dope, he's this, he's that. I think everything is centered on maintaining his relationship with that base. And when you put, you stand in front of a portrait of Jackson, for example, you know what you're doing. When you call her Pocahontas, you know what you're doing. It's a way of people shoving each other in the ribs and say, hey, you know, that kind of thing. And I think he may be smarter than you guys think.
Yeah, the Associated Press described it as code talking by
exactly.
President Trump during that event at the White House where he said Pocahontas. He knows who he's talking to.
So the World War II Navajo code talker is the heroic Native Americans who helped the U.S. Marines send coded message in the Pacific Theater. Apparently, although it did seem as though the president was just couldn't resist the shot at Elizabeth Warren and making the comment.
People should remember that Elizabeth Warren at one point filled out a form in which she said that she had ancestry, Native American ancestry. That's why.
Cherokee, I think. Yeah,
yeah, that's why I called it Pope.
And subsequently, she couldn't prove that.
Yeah. Yes. Correct. And the Navajo Nation said it is unfortunate that President Trump would refer to Senator Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas in a joking way. Pocahontas, although she wasn't Navajo, definitely was a historical figure in the foundation of this nation who was misrepresented in history. And so we as the Navajo Nation don't feel any member of any tribal nation should be used as the punchline of a joke. This is from the group that they were honoring, by the way, yesterday. Also, when asked about the Jackson portrait, the group said it's unfortunate.
They were quite diplomatic, actually.
They were diplomatic.
They said they appreciate being honored by the White House, and they tried to just put this all to the side. I thought that was pretty, you know, remarkable.
And we should point out for our younger listeners, or perhaps others, that Jackson was horrible to the Indians.
Yes, he was. He did. Wasn't it the Indian Removal Act or some? Yeah. Some
it was
name
signed
like
into law, yeah. The Indian Removal Act. This is and then meanwhile, you're absolutely right, Mike. I mean, the gentlemen who were being honored were very grace
contributors.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Well, they were gracious.
Gracious. There you go. Yeah. That was the word I was looking for. Gracious.
And they deserve the honor. I mean, they helped the Allies during World War II break the codes of the Germans, and it saved thousands of lives on the Allied side, American lives and Allied lives. So it was really substantial.
For her part, Elizabeth Warren asked about this, said that she believes that it's a racial slur. So there we are in regards to the letter and that subject of the president referring to Pocahontas during the ceremony to honor the Navajo code talkers.
So that's right, Mike. I just wanted to point out it's not only breaking the codes, but using their Navajo dialect to confuse the Germans by communicating in Navajo in the language.
Their code cannot be broken.
Yeah.
Right. That's the more substantial part of that. Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that I agree with Alan that Trump is doing this very purposely. He sees Elizabeth Warren as a potential threat in 2020 and an actual very credible candidate. She's been doing the rounds on late night over the last couple of weeks. She's tremendous on the stump. And Trump, as we remember in the primaries, him labeling Lion Ted and Little Marco and Low Energy Jeb and Crooked Hillary, and he is labeling Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, which creates in the media every time he calls her that, everybody has to explain why she's called Pocahontas, and I think it helps him.
Well, it could. It certainly does play to that base, which hates everybody but, you know, themselves.
Yes.
Or
people like themselves.
Okay, yeah. So it plays to the base, but the other 70% find it deplorable.
Well, I can point only one thing out to all of you in this room. Donald Trump is the president of the United States.
That's right.
He had a strategy. It worked. If people don't vote, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Did you ever think one of the reasons that you don't like these people like Hillary Clinton or Elizabeth Warren or Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush was because they were so constantly attacked that we actually have changed our opinion of them because of Trump's insults hurled at them?
That's a good point. And the
part of the reason.
Well, and it wavers, right? I mean, yeah. I think even, you know, I never thought I would feel any amount of concern over the feelings of Jeff Sessions or Mitch McConnell, and yet the president can seem to do that occasionally.
Yeah, that's true.
You momentarily feel sorry for them.
Well,
don't
you? Right. Even with Sean Spicer, when they didn't let him go see the Pope, I was like, really?
Till their next appearance on Saturday Night Live. But I want to go back to Elizabeth Warren, if I can, for a moment. You know, in the old days, the first thing that the centrist political science community would yell when you talk about Elizabeth Warren as a presidential candidate is too far left, won't play to the middle. And yet there's a good deal of post-election analysis now. Who cares? It woulda, coulda, shoulda. But that Bernie Sanders could have been elected because people were looking for a something outside the box. And Elizabeth Warren is, of course, outside the box. So there is a sense that by Trump, apparently, that she might be a dangerous opponent.
Well, if you look at policy, you might say Elizabeth Warren is too far left. But if you look at policy, you would also probably make that case about Barack Obama. On messaging and being a natural politician. If you watch, I encourage people to YouTube Elizabeth Warren's first interview with David Letterman. She basically had David Letterman in the palm of her hand with her message on the working family that she grew up in, how her family made enough money to send her to college and put a little aside and have two cars in the garage. And she's an excellent messenger for the Democratic message if they want to beat Trump in 2020. I think she's a very formidable opponent for Trump.
And regardless, she'll be a voice, even if she's not the candidate, she'll be a strong voice in the campaign to defeat Trump in 2020 or whoever runs for the Republicans.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. We'll move on to other topics. WAMC, it's panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We'd love to include your letters as well. We will be back right after this. We love your letters. panel@WAMC.org
Even if not all of them are read, they're read by Alan.
We at least
loud.
Make fun of them during the break. panel@WAMC.org Good morning, all. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate your time. And so let's move on to some other topics and talk about what is happening. This is a story that I find to be fascinating. I would have led with this if I just didn't think it was maybe the lead story. But my God, is it an interesting story. The Washington Post put out this. I assume the Media Project will talk about perhaps nothing else this week. But this is an amazing story. A woman approached the Washington Post with a dramatic and false tale about Roy Moore. She now, through a Washington Post investigation, appears to be part of an undercover sting operation. So there's this group called Project Veritas that is, their job is to target mainstream news media and left-leaning groups, and to set up, one of their jobs is to set up these stings that involve using false cover stories and covert video recordings meant to expose what the group says is a media bias.
It's unbelievable.
Okay. So they go in, and the day after the Post breaks the story about Roy Moore, the Republican U.S. Senate candidate in Alabama, and saying that he had
inappropriate relations with a 14-year-old, that a young woman came to the Washington Post saying that Roy Moore impregnated her as a teenager. So they interviewed her over 2 weeks. The woman shared a dramatic story about this alleged sexual relationship in 1992 that led to an abortion, she said, when she was 15. During the interview, she repeatedly pressed Post reporters to give their opinions on the effects that her claims could have on Moore's candidacy if she went public. The Post did not publish an article based on her unsubstantiated account. When Post reporters confronted her with inconsistencies in her story and an internet posting that raised doubts about her motivation, she insisted that she was not working with any organization that targets journalists. But on Monday morning, Post reporters saw her walking into the New York offices of Project Veritas, an organization that targets the mainstream news media and left-leaning groups. James O'Keefe, the Project Veritas founder, who was convicted of misdemeanors in 2010 for using a fake identity to enter a federal building during a previous sting, declined to answer questions. I want to get to, real quick, the quote by Marty Baron, and I just have to find it real quick. Oh, because this is the part that I thought is, I don't want to steal this from the Media Project, but it's just a great thing is
there's
that,
enough room for all of us.
So they had all of this. They agreed. The woman comes in. They agreed. She agrees to talk off the record, right? So that's she right. agrees to talk off the record. Well, then once they realize that it's a ruse, they publish what she says. And so Marty Baron says, "We always honor off-the-record agreements when they're entered into in good faith. But this so-called off-the-record conversation was the essence of a scheme to deceive and embarrass us. The intent by Project Veritas clearly was to publicize the conversation if we fell for the trap. Because of our customary journalistic rigor, we weren't fooled, and we can't honor an off-the-record agreement that was solicited in maliciously bad faith."
Yeah. Now, Marty Baron's, of course, from the Boston Globe.
Was Boston Globe now with the Washington Post?
Washington Post, right? And you know, I was going to take a shot.
The executive editor.
I get it. I was going to take a shot at the at the Boston Globe for writing a scurrilous and silly editorial about the art sale in Pittsfield. But I digress.
Right. Marty Baron is no longer at the...
No, we can't Washington. Hold him responsible.
Well, this comes after another ruse that was perhaps associated with Project Veritas. I don't know. But people were getting phone calls in the last couple of weeks in Alabama where the message being left was, I'm a Washington Post reporter.
Right.
And he identifies himself as Bernstein, but not Carl Bernstein, some other...
Bernie Bernstein.
Yeah,
Bernie.
Suggesting that if you have information, we'll use it. We won't use your name. You know, it was definitely intended, just as this apparently was, to discredit the very, you know, substantial and validated reporting that the Washington Post has done on this. And it also this demonstrates that the Washington Post does vet their stories, and that and to me it underscores the validity of what these other women have said, and it may have backfired on these people.
To say nothing about the technique, which sounds very reminiscent of what the Russians have been doing lately in terms of injecting false stories into the media.
Talk about fake news.
Yeah, so that's extraordinary. First thing I did when I saw that in the middle of the night when I was checking the headlines and all was to write to Ian, our wonderful news director, and say to him, you know, we have to be really careful now because this is the new thing, which we always are. And he wrote back and said, we always are careful, number one. And number two, I'm way ahead of you, boss. We've put this out for our staff.
I watched the video of the Washington Post reporters then confronting James O'Keefe yesterday, which is remarkable because O'Keefe is famous for hidden camera conversations with people and then cutting it up and making it, you know, he does many outlets, the Drudge Report and others, think that he is excellent at outing liberal bias in governmental organizations and in the media. But this is a case where, you know, the Washington Post now has a hidden camera shot of him refusing to talk. This is very sloppy work on Project Veritas's part. And I think that they likely get paid a lot of money to try to affect the outcome of elections. This was clearly not Project Veritas trying to expose liberal bias in the media. This was Project Veritas trying to change the outcome of an election and try to get Roy Moore elected as Senate. And this is old school Lee Atwater tactics that are now being revamped for 2017.
Which Lee Atwater, who most people who listen to the station will remember, but a lot won't, was a Nixonian.
He was Reagan.
Reagan, and he apologized.
Dirty tricks.
He died early, and he apologized before he did for his dirty tricks.
Yeah, dirty tricks go back, way back. Obviously, they were big, the dirty tricks in Watergate, you know, with the Donald Segretti, et cetera. But the reporter for the Washington Post, Stephanie McCrummon, there's a video of her in a restaurant in Alexandria, Virginia, with this Jamie Phillips, this woman who was making the accusations. And it looks like Jamie Phillips is like moving her purse around trying to get a better angle. She must have had a hidden camera also. It's like hidden cameras and hidden cameras. But
yes.
Stephanie McCrummon told her, you know, we are recording you right now and we're doing a video of you right now, just so that you know. And you know, that was the beginning of when Phillips began to clam up and say, I don't want to talk to you anymore. You know?
So the only part of the story that I thought was unusual, and maybe you can help me, not unusual, but so they saw her walking into the Project Veritas offices. We assume they were following her?
They were. She lived in Connecticut, and there's a Project Veritas office in Manhattan, and there's one up in Westchester County, and they put people in front of both of them, and it paid off. They saw her walk into it. You know, I mean, this is somebody who tried to sting the Washington Post and discredit them in a terrible way, and they checked out their facts, and they found exactly what was reported today.
So does it? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, if it becomes a big enough story, that those reporters could get fired for believing that. We remember what happened to Dan Rather in the 2004
right.
election with the George Bush story.
I mean, came down to a typewriter.
And it would be very interesting to see if some left leaning groups potentially now see the success that the Washington Post had with combating Project Veritas and whether they might actually target James O'Keefe and try and get him on the record or on some hidden camera.
So, Alan, does it have any effect on the Roy Moore election, which happens in 14 days?
I think it's a couple of steps removed, to be honest with you. I don't think it does. I think it comes down to the true believers, the Kool-Aid, and what's happening. I was watching the telly this morning, and there's a retired colonel who is now mounting, a Republican colonel, who is now mounting a write-in campaign.
Right.
In which, you know, he's talking about 200,000 voters could make a huge difference down there. And if there's a third candidate, if there's another Republican, that sure can't help Roy Moore.
No, it can't. Now, in the 2012 election, when Roy Moore was elected as judge again, Romney did very well in Alabama. Roy Moore only got like 51% of the vote. So he's already not getting the same percentages that a mainstream Republican candidate would get. And you're right. I mean, if all you do is have to enter another Republican and...
Well, except that there's another name on the ballot now that wasn't there when you were referring to. And that name is Trump. You know, I mean, what Trump has done is to put his imprimatur on Moore by saying he's my guy, basically, in which case you're not voting for the candidate anymore. Now you're voting for Trump. And we do know that he's immensely popular in Alabama.
Didn't work for Luther Strange, Alan.
No, that's true.
And we were here talking last week saying that Trump's silence was his endorsement. I was very surprised that he came out and endorsed this guy.
Well, what they're doing is they think they're losing.
Right.
They think they're going to lose it. They're going to lose that extra vote, which they desperately need. That's why you have Trump doing it. I mean, this is not a guy who acts on principle. This is a guy who acts on need.
And now they're calling Doug Jones, the Democratic candidate, a former federal prosecutor who put KKK people behind bars, soft on crime.
Yeah, sure. Except that they had a former U.S. attorney from Alabama, a woman, on this morning talking about all the incredible work that Doug Jones has done in terms of fighting mafioso and everything else in the state.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, your letters, panel at WAMC.org. It's Giving Tuesday. We'll give you a chance to do your part. WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It's the 28th of November. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller on the panel this morning. We welcome your input as well. Panel at WAMC.org. And that is where we get letters like these.
Oh, yes. Brenda writes on the matter of Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren is still the woman, and I'm not convinced the woman will win in 2020. Trump's election also revealed deep misogyny across both parties, and that's from Brenda. Brenda, I hope you're wrong, but you may well be right, and because polls show it. You know, there are some men in this country who disgustingly will not vote for a woman. It's crazy. And the opposite is not true.
Right.
Okay. And Judy says Pocahontas. She wasn't Cherokee, but Powhatan. Hello. It's downright disgusting how little is known of our own indigenous history. And that's from Judy. Alexander says of the Washington Post, the New York Times published an opinion piece by Barry Weiss. The topic was Believe All Women. The message was Trust But Verify. I agree wholeheartedly. And that's from Alexander. Kathy says, Veritas. This was Project Veritas working to destroy truth. Oh, the irony. The only people who seem to have lied in this whole deal were Ms. Phillips and Mr. O'Keefe. Luke says of the Washington Post question, how dare you mention Lee Atwater and James O'Keefe in the same breath? Atwater was a competent, dirty trickster. O'Keefe is a nincompoop.
That's good. That's a good letter.
Dorothy says, Trump's oligarchy? One different definition of oligarchy. I want to read the opening. Dear esteemed and fabulous panel.
Oh, I like that.
See, that's how you get in. One definition of oligarchy is government in which a small group exercises control, especially for corrupt and selfish purposes. Given Trump's attempt to control the media, nationwide finances, and healthcare, combined with his disregard for climate control, fair and just response to natural disaster victims, et cetera, are we headed toward an oligarchy or worse? And that's Dorothy, who is a community college instructor. Darn right. We're headed there. We're there. And certainly, you could say an oligarchy where Ryan, Mitch McConnell, and the President of the United States sitting in a room. And I happen to believe in the great sociologist Robert Michels, who always said, you know, when you have a group of people, one person will end up as the head oligarch. And that is true. Kimberly says to the panel, Navajo code talkers were in the Pacific. Back to what you were talking about yesterday. Please focus on the issues, net neutrality, the budget, the tax bill. Stop reporting on the stupid things Trump does.
I stand corrected on that. I said in the European theater, it was the Pacific theater that the code talkers helped.
Yeah, but still, you know, the President of the United States has a pretty big bully pulpit. And when he says something, I do think it is our obligation to say he said it because he's trying to affect public policy in this country. Anthony says, deficit hawks. Panel, Republican deficit hawks only come out when Democrats want to increase the deficit with social programs that expand the budget. Those same Republican deficit hawks will turn a blind eye when they implement tax codes that in the end will increase their earnings with lower taxes. That's from Anthony. And Christine says, good morning, panel. Why isn't everyone...
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, panel. Why isn't everyone concerned with the college savings plan that can be set up for unborn fetuses? Where are the women senators? This is another under-the-radar effort by the Tea Party conservatives to undermine Roe versus Wade by establishing personhood status to unborn fetuses. And that's from Christine. Robert is just wondering, Bob, what would happen if Chuck and Nancy declined to meet with Trump until he apologized for his racist Pocahontas remark? Would Trump let the government shut down? And code talkers, they did not break the German and Japanese codes. They were talkers, not breakers. And that's from Joe. Okay. And Paul says, corporate taxes. It is a myth that U.S. corporate taxes are high compared to the rest of the world. Yes, the published rate is 35% tax rate, but the net corporate tax average post-deductions averages between 17 and 20% rate, on par with the rest of the world. The template for corporate tax reform was eliminate the vast number of industry-specific deductions and have a simple lower rate. The Republicans are slashing the corporate tax rate, but not eliminating the corporate boondoggle deductions. Corporate America is getting a tax cut and keeping the deductions. All greed all the time. Paul from Saratoga. Casey says, may I please have the courtesy of a rebuttal to the response on my question of where are the Democrats?
What? When do you get a rebuttal?
Two letters in one day?
When do you get a rebuttal?
First of all, we read your thing. That's the highest honor you can have, because we get hundreds, sometimes thousands of letters. Second of all, we had a discussion about it.
What is the League of Women Voters setting the rules now? You have to have a rebuttal.
We broke the rule. We've read two letters now by the same person.
No. I read this to you earlier. That's why you're thinking it was two letters by the same person. But what I love is the word courtesy. May I please have the courtesy of a rebuttal?
We love your letters.
Right. And Bob, Bob from Prosecco, by making the remark he did, Trump made that ceremony about himself and not the code breakers he was honoring. Nothing new from one of the most self-absorbed people in the world. That's what I got, Joe.
All right. Well, let's then move on to other stories and find out other things to talk about. I think we can do that. Let us move to the... We talked about this yesterday, but I'd like to talk about it again, because two bosses are showing up to lead the Consumer Financial Protection Board. So you have two people who say they are in charge. Who is actually in charge? On Monday, Mick Mulvaney, the acting director of the Consumer Financial Protection Board, brought in donuts for employees. Around the same time, Leandra English, the agency's other acting director, sent an all-staff email thanking the workforce for its service. Awkward. It is awkward, because Leandra should have brought donuts as well. So unfolded another frenetic workday in the corner of a capital city defined by hyperpartisan dysfunction. Two public servants, one a holdover from the Obama administration, the other a rushed temporary appointee by the president, messily and publicly vied to lead an agency that has fought for consumers while under political assault by Republicans. Its future as an independent agency rests on who leads it next.
Well, the statute itself says that the outgoing person, in an attempt to keep the agency independent, gets to name the replacement. On the other hand, the president has the power to appoint executive officials, and the council for the agency says, no, the president has the primacy here. If I were going to handicap what was going to happen here, Mulvaney will end up on the top.
Right. Do you think it'll probably not be Mulvaney? He'll probably pick somebody else, because
sure.
Mulvaney is busy building a budget that's trying to get through Congress. But Elizabeth Warren, who was involved with setting up the Consumer Protection Board before she was a U.S. senator, argues that it was intended that it would be independent. But it is an executive branch agency.
No
question. So it's likely that a judge, and this particular judge was appointed by Trump, will end up siding with the president.
So what do we... Meanwhile, though, how long is this going to be till it all gets worked out?
It doesn't matter. Don't you see? You said it. No. I mean, you quoted the New York Times phrase, hyper-partisan dysfunction. And that's sufficient. If nothing happens because of dysfunction, it's better from the Trump perspective than having the Consumer Protection Board function and make rulings and establish rules and enforce rules, rather having them kind of just off to the side during this period is perfectly okay. It succeeds.
And like so many other government agencies, this is a joke agency. You've seen the abuses that have happened in terms of all of our personal data being leaked out, the Experian scandal.
The data breaches, sure, yeah.
Facebook scandals. You know, this Consumer Protection Bureau's record of protecting consumers is abysmal. And it's a crazy agency anyway, and I think that's what the Trump administration's view of this agency is, that it's not protecting consumers. It's simply, bureaucrats in Washington that are putting unnecessary curbs on what companies do and not focusing on the real issues of protecting consumers.
Well, you got to remember that this was established after the 2008 financial crisis. It was put into place to protect consumers. Elizabeth Warren pointed out yesterday that nearly 30 million American consumers have collected almost $12 billion in refunds because of the actions by the Consumer Protection Agency. And yeah, people like Trump and Mick Mulvaney have called it a joke. But I think it's somewhere in the middle, and a lot of it has to do with the policy that's established by who's ever in the White House. And currently, it will be a joke if it even tries to do anything. But I don't think you can outright dismiss it. It was an honest attempt to prevent another disaster like we had in 2008, as was all of Dodd-Frank, which seems to be piece by piece getting rescinded.
Sure.
Okay, let us finally talk about a story that it's the story that everyone's talking about, and yet we don't know a whole lot yet, but it's still, well, pretty darn interesting, which is, has Michael Flynn flipped? Has Michael Flynn made a plea deal? What do we know? Michael Flynn's lawyer meets with members of the special counsel's team, raising the specter of a plea deal. So what is Michael Flynn doing with Robert Mueller, special counsel, and his team? And what is he saying? And what is the indication that both sides are discussing a possible deal? Now, we do know that the Trump lawyers have come out over the weekend saying that they are distancing themselves from Michael Flynn and they will have no further contact with him. Which would indicate that this is true, right?
That's one interpretation. I think all the stories have right away said this could mean that he's negotiating a plea agreement, but it may, and where he may or may not testify on behalf of the government against the Trump administration. It's all speculation. I haven't read anything that portends to know what's really going on.
You know, if I were Michael Flynn, and I faced maybe 15, 20 years in the slammer, I damn well would make a deal with Mueller.
And his son also could be affected.
Well, yeah, they may trade the son. We won't prosecute the son. We won't prosecute the wife. We won't prosecute, those are all potential things that you have to think about. And, of course, the brilliance of Mueller is that he's getting people like our own attorney general in New York State to go along with this and the possibility of separate charges where the president can't pardon. So that doesn't seem to be, helpful in getting through this. I have said all along, and I'm sticking with it, that he's going to have to fire Mueller. Even though everybody is saying the opposite. I had a wonderful interview yesterday, and all I can say is that Republicans and Democrats alike are saying if he does that, there's going to be hell to pay, and it's going to be a constitutional crisis. But I don't think he has any choice.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Alan. I think that there'll be a point where he'll face firing Mueller, and then the consequences will be that there'll be an uproar. Whether that uproar would be worse than Mueller indicting him or indicting everybody around him and naming him as an unindicted co-conspirator, I don't know which is worse.
I wouldn't want to be these guys. I think the only one who clearly will brazen it out to the very end, because it's the way he's lived his life, is the president. Whether he's in trouble over paying a bill or doing this or that, he just powers on. And you know, it works. He's gotten away with murder. I don't mean that physical murder.
But even he acknowledges that he could get away with murder.
Yeah, he says so. But I think these people know that they are in serious trouble.
So when you think about that, though, if you're Flynn, as you said, Alan, I mean, obviously you take this seriously and you look at what the deal is possible, but this gets into the what did he know, when did he know it?
Yeah, and still nobody has provided any evidence that Trump himself was
That's
aware
right.
that the campaign, and there may or have been
was
people
leading in, the charge, right?
Yeah, right, and could have been, you know, that was his protection. It was plausible deniability.
And Flynn could agree to help, and then they interview him and they say, unfortunately, you don't really have anything that's helping us.
Yeah.
Right? That's possible as well. Or he may say, well, when I was alone in a car with the president, I said X, Y, and Z, and they say, well, that's great, but who else was in the car with you? And you need to prove it. So, but Preet Bharara had a great quote the other day saying, if you're Trump and you did something wrong, you're definitely feeling the heat right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by what you were saying earlier, though, is that he's the only one left who seems impervious to all of this, Trump. And that, so we always called Reagan the Teflon president. But I will admit I'm in the middle of reading Katie Turr's book, and of the campaign, and she was reporting. She was the head reporter for NBC on that campaign, and every day she felt it was going to be her last day because she just said, "Oh well, when he does this, okay,
he'll never survive.
So tomorrow I'll be back in London, and tomorrow, oh, the Muslim ban. Okay, well tomorrow I'll be back, and nothing ever stuck, and it's just that happened." For 600 days that she covered him, every day you figured was going to be the day. Nothing happened. And
so what would happen would change that? I'm not sure.
So we are a fickle people. Even when Nixon was being impeached, or there was a theory that we were going to impeach Nixon, it never happened, of course, you know, his numbers were not that bad.
26% on the day he resigned, 24%.
That's on the day he resigned.
Yeah.
But how about the months before that? You know,
it was close to what it is for Trump now.
Yeah. Well,
we've also all met people that believe they're right. And Trump truly believes that he did nothing wrong. I think that. And when he, especially a very confident person like Trump, believes that he did nothing wrong, and he always believes that, no matter what he does, is that he never did anything wrong.
He may have done something, but he doesn't believe in the long run that it was wrong. His right-wrong determinant is different than most people's.
His right-wrong compass is way off. According to most people, but if he believes he's right and he didn't do anything wrong, he I don't think feels pressure right now. If he thinks though that there's some evidence out there that will implicate him, you will see him react.
We are out of time, but I want to thank everybody who wrote to us and who spent time with us. We thank you very much. Last call, just wanted to remind you about Giving Tuesday. You can do it, obviously, throughout
so
the day.
Important.
So
it really
is. Last call, but last time we'll be talking about it in this segment. So Giving Tuesday is today. We would love to have you help us out. And all you have to do is go to WAMC.org. You can also call us 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262.
We really need the help. We really need that help because, as I said before, there's something huge on the horizon coming up, which will be the continuation of this radio station.
We love you. We thank you. And know you'll do the right thing. WAMC.org. My thanks to all of our wonderful panelists this morning. We'll return with more program right after this.